When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast, everybody. I have another great, wonderful, wonderful guest. And I wanted to, we're just going to go ahead and get right into it. It is April, end of April. Things are happening. My spring concert is a couple days away, and super excited to have that behind me. But it's going to be a really cool concert. We're doing a Night at the Movies and More concert. So we do a bunch of movie music. We do all kinds of really fun stuff. Let the kids kind of have a pick process in picking that music. And so it's been a lot of fun just to get that going and get started. So I wanted to introduce our guest. Our guest today is Mr. Ron Castanguay, who is the music director at the Frederick Gunn School in Connecticut. Welcome, Ron, to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, we tried to connect at ASTA last month, and it's just busy. I know you guys had a booth and board meetings, and it just was too much. So we finally got to connect here, and really looking forward to getting to know you and learning all about all the great things that you have to offer our profession.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, so could you tell us a little bit about maybe your background and your career? I know you've had several decades span of career so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks again for having me. This is great. So I grew up in Massachusetts, went down to the University of Miami and started as a jazz saxophone performance major and then switched over to music theory and composition, which I absolutely loved. And I minored in math. And then I my first job out of college, just to make some money, make ends meet while I was gigging, was a math teacher.
Oh, wow.
I was an algebra and trigonometry teacher, and I fell in love with teaching. And so the two worlds collided the following year when I said, well, I love music. I love teaching. And so I started teaching at a little school down in Southwest Miami-Dade County for a few years, teaching K through 8. And then a position opened up at Gulliver Preparatory School in Miami, a very well-renowned school down there. And long story short, I ended up being there for 23 years. It happens. 23 years later, you blink your eyes. Department chair for the performing arts. I was teaching all the music ensembles, not out of ego, but just because I was building a program. Sure. And they didn't want to hire new teachers. So, teach chorus. All right, I'm going to go take voice lessons, teach strings. All right, I'm going to go take cello lessons, So it was really cool. And then just looking for a change of scenery. I have two daughters. I was just thinking about, the culture of Miami and the whole thing and wanted to get back to my roots in New England. And this position at the Frederick Gunn School opened up, where I'm director of the arts. I'm running the music program, overseeing a beautiful $22 million building.
Wow.
It's really, really.
Is that a private school or a public school?
Yeah. So it's a private boarding school, nine through 12 plus PG, which means post-grad. So we've got some students that take a year between high school and college, usually for athletics.
Okay.
So it's been a really different experience for me. I grew up in public school, spent most of my career in private day school, and now I'm in my fifth year at a private boarding school. So So it's kind of the full gamut. In addition to teaching, I gig on sax, I compose, things like that. So it's just been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you're doing some guest conducting and clinicking and things like that as well, and presenting, I know.
Yep. Absolutely. And trying to do more of the conducting, because that's really one of my passions.
Sure. And then the thing that drew me to learn more about you was your new book that you just put out. And that was put out right around ASTA, or was it at ASTA?
It was March 15th.
Okay. So right before.
Just before. March 15th was the release date. Yeah. So the book is 4 years in the making. You were talking about your studio over COVID. So Adrian Gordon and I kind of inspired each other to start our books on the onset of COVID. He was in Miami, I was in Connecticut. We talked every day, and we just kind of just inspired each other to write the books we've been meaning to write. And it's on a rhythmic sight reading method that I used at Gulliver Prep for decades. And it's time tested.
Yeah.
I tried all the different methods, and I came up with this one that worked really well for my students. And I said, you know what, I'm going to put this into a method style curriculum book and see what happens. And it took 4 years to write, because I was very detail oriented and meticulous about, the scaffolding and all of that. So I'm really proud of it.
So tell us the book, the title, and what it's all about.
Yeah, so it's rhythmic sight reading, very simple, and the subtitle is the Tikka-T method.
Tikka-T.
The Tikka-T method. So, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. These words are all words that probably many of us have used at one point or another. But I tried the Kodai method, the Gordon method, the One Ianda method. I tried them all, and what I noticed is that there wasn't one rhythmic sight reading method that worked throughout all my ensembles. So if I was If I wanted to teach chorus, maybe I'd use the Kodai. If I was teaching strings, I might use the Gordon. And I was like, why can't we have one that can go all the ensembles? Yeah. And so I have the system where it's basically four words: ta, ti, tikka, and tripalet. Right? That's not reinventing the wheel, but sure. I realized that those four words can work in simple time signatures, compound time signatures, the subdivision of the 16th notes having only tikka instead of taka dimi, or whatever.
Sure.
Really made a huge difference to my students. They could do it at any tempo, and it just became part of my curriculum, and it was like an unwritten part of my curriculum. Did it every day, and my students were really good sight readers, so they really benefited from it at the program. And so I took it, all the things that I've done with my students, and I just kind of put it into a book. From beginning to pretty advanced rhythms, there's 36 chapters per se.
Okay.
To go with a 36 week school year. Yeah. And so if you start at the beginning and you go to the end, you're probably going to be able to read most rhythms put in front of you.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
because sight reading is one of those things that, I consider a synthesis of all the things that we teach, the technique and that rhythm reading part, though, if they can read the rhythms, that's a huge part of it. I mean, that's a majority of it.
Correct. And what I was realizing was every time I would hear one of my students sight read, individually, whether they're auditioning for Allstates or whatever, 90% of the mistakes they were making was in the rhythm.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they might miss a key signature note once in a while, but that's a pretty easy fix when you talk about scales and harmonies. But
yeah.
The rhythm thing, like dotted quarter note, eighth note rhythms and syncopation and just getting all these things down. Most of the mistakes that we're making were rhythm.
Okay.
And I think if we can fix that, we're fixing a major part of, because I believe strongly that one of the reasons that students drop music in school is because they have to read music and the reading notation, it gets to them. And especially at an earlier age. And I think if we can work to help teachers make this more fun, more accessible, find a practical method that works for all types of ensembles.
Yeah.
I think we're on to something.
That's really cool. Yeah, definitely want to check that out. And so you said it was a long process. Could you just give us, maybe an example of a rhythm, and then how you would use your that counting system to
yeah.
I mean, you say it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you say it. So it's mm-hmm. the book is about vocalization of rhythm, but then of course, and in the book I say how to use it for chorus, how to use it for strings, how to use it for band, guitar class, yeah. whatever you're using it for, music theory. But you know, for example, I was just talking about the 16th notes. You know, like let's say you have 16th rest followed by three 16th notes. You know, at faster tempos, if you're really good at the systems you're using, you know, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel, that's just me, but like, you know, ienda, that was a little tricky for my students, or adimi was getting tricky. So with atika, you've got the percussive T and K, which really helps students subdivide. So when you have that atika, and they were feeling the T's and the K's, and they were really feeling that first 16th note after the 16th rest, I was like, oh, wow, they're really feeling that groove more than these other methods.
And it's very percussive.
And that's the whole thing behind it. There's a lot of T's and K's, P's in the triplet. You know, in the weakest beat of the triplet being the third one is just the L. So it works out perfectly. Like, you know, and when the triplets, you could do blueberry, strawberry. Yeah. I was noticing with my high school kids, you know, they don't want that. That's too silly.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what are they called? They're called triplets. Okay. Triplet, you know? So it's just, you know, it just seemed to work. And ta is for quarter notes and everything longer. Okay. So you have that opportunity to talk to the students about time signatures and tell them about a quarter note versus a half note versus, and it's all ta'd. And instead of saying for a whole note, ta, two, three, four, you just hold the ta'd for four beats. You may conduct it while you're doing it, whatever you need to do. Eighth notes are T, you know, so that's the, so you can have when there's two, T, 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 but the upbeats have that percussive T, T, T. And it's almost like the hi-hat, you know, sound.
Yeah.
And it was working for my students in concert band, in jazz band, because you can still do it in swing. You can do all these words in swing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cool. So, you know, if I'm doing jazz band, T, 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 you know, it's still,
it still works
great in jazz band. Chorus, it gave them that feeling of the subdivision. And strings, you know, as soon as you put the bow, you know, talk about up bows and down bows, and it really relayed nicely to strings as well. So I just use that across all my ensembles. And even that's how I taught time signatures in my AP music theory class.
Wow.
It just, it really worked. It really worked.
And then have you found that it works well with like the youngest students too? I mean, like how young would you say, how inexperienced? I mean, from very beginners and
I would say, so as I wrote this book, I was actually thinking upper elementary. So at the school that I worked at, music ensembles began in the fourth grade. So if you could imagine, you know, using this method in a music school system that was fourth grade through 12th grade, and you were teaching the same rhythmic sight reading method to all of your music classes from fourth grade through 12th grade, by the time they get to the 12th grade, they're going to have this thing mastered. Yeah. But to answer your question, I think you could start as early as fourth grade. Wow. And I still have students. I had students reach out to me recently that are auditioning for, you know, Broadway parts. And they said they were using the Tikka T method to figure out some of the rhythms in the books.
Cool.
When they had the audition, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I have students that are now teachers that are using the method, in, you know, with their ensembles. So it's really flattering and it's humbling. And I really wanted to share this with the world. And when COVID hit, I was like, well, I'm not going to make sourdough bread. So let's write a book, you know, so let's write a book.
Yeah.
And I'm really, it's like my baby. I'm really proud of it.
That's very cool. And then, where can people buy the book?
So right now it's on my website. You can go to my shop. Okay. On my website.
I'm going to pull that up right here while we're talking.
Okay. So, great.
Yeah.
And then in the next couple of days, it will be available on JW Pepper.
Oh, great.
And then in a few weeks, it will be available on Amazon.
Fantastic. Okay. So that's easy way to get it. It looks great. So I can't wait to check it out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Tell us what else, you know, trends in music education or things that, you know, that you see going on that, you know, concern you or that you want to maybe chat about. We'd love to hear there's any other like, you know, topics or concerns in music education that might impact our orchestra teachers that are listening as well.
Yeah. And thanks for the question. You know, it kind of relates to why I wrote this book is because I'm starting to feel that students, are really looking for when course registration happens, right? They're looking for one of two things. They're looking for, you know, quote unquote, fun classes. You know, if it's not fun, and it's a little bit of hard work, they might not sign up again. So yeah, the attrition versus retention rates there. You know, and you've got the other end of the spectrum too, where there's scheduling conflicts and a student might drop their senior year of orchestra to take AP, you know, AP French or whatever they have to do. Yes. And you're just like, wait, you're my concert master and you're going to quit in your senior year. Yeah. You know, so I'm seeing trends of teachers being very concerned about scheduling conflicts and or a very consumer-based course registration process.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, I don't want to take that because it takes work. And we're living now in a world of just, you know, instant gratification, TikTok, social media. And don't get me wrong, I use them all. I don't think bad things, but we have to balance them. And students have to realize, you know, some things actually take some work. And the benefit from that work is really something you take with you the rest of your life.
It's hard for it's hard to instill that in kids.
It is.
And, you know, the word that comes to mind for me is grit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lack of understanding, like you have to like dig in and dig deeper. Sometimes it's not just going to be, you know, you can't just type it into, you know, into Google or whatever. Now the AI is making things even easier and just kind of crazy. So, I agree with you on that. And, you know, I'm running into some of those things too, and we have that the whole weighted GPA versus unweighted, and this class is, you know, has a quality point or whatever they call it, so they get extra high GPAs. Mm-hmm. And taking music classes because it's not weighted at this time lowers their GPA.
Oh yeah, and it's funny, I dealt with that at Gulliver, so I fought fire with fire, and what I did was to accommodate that is I had leveled classes. So if you were in, let's say, vocal ensemble, my chorus. I had vocal ensemble intermediate, vocal ensemble advanced, vocal ensemble conservatory. And once they got to advanced conservatory, now they could get those points and they compete. And as they're getting in their junior and senior years, and as I was seeing, those are the years students are, you know, they're figuring out APs and they were actually staying in because now we're competing with the bloated grade point average in our music program,
right,
and they stay in without lowering their GPA.
Yeah, that's so great.
And I'm doing that at the Frederick Gunn School as well.
Fantastic.
We're trying to just compete with that and have students realize that, you know, when we think about colleges, it's still not all academics. College applications, colleges are very, very competitive right now, and they want to see dedication and longevity in a program. And if they see that you're in, not just in strings all 4 years, but you went from string ensemble to string ensemble advanced to string ensemble conservatory in your 4 years at the school, they're going to say, oh, that's dedication. That's progression.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fantastic for colleges to see. You have to be a well-rounded student. Colleges are so competitive right now.
Yeah, and there's just, you know, there's so many people with the same grade point average. It's like, okay, what separates you apart? And this is what I tell the kids. I said, even if yours is slightly lower, and they look at your transcript, and they look at the recommendation that I write you, having known you for 4 or 5 or more years or whatever it might be, I said, that just speaks a lot higher than someone who's just taken academics, you know? So
I totally agree. Yeah. And the other thing too, is like, okay, you might have a 5.14 GPA, which is crazy because 4 is as high as you can go, but the colleges don't actually accept that. They recalculate them based on the classes you take.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if all students know that, but a lot of the college will recalculate.
Yes.
They won't always accept those internal crazy bloated GPAs.
Yeah. Which is helpful for us, but yeah, we're working on, that proposal to get the quality point, whatever they call it, so they can get the higher GPA. And it's going to require extra work on the student's part and extra work on our part. But I think it'll be worth it just for that retention piece. And
I think it is. Yeah, our school calls it now, I think it's called a bump point. I have my students do is I have an advanced level contract and I have a conservatory level contract, and there's certain things the students have to do throughout the year, whether it's audition for Northern Regionals or audition for all states or be a section leader, they have to do certain things. So it's, you know, it qualifies the bump point, and it shows leadership, and they can put that on their, you know, their resume if they want to as well, which is always good. So, you know, in the music education world, you know, we got to fight fire with fire a little bit, but it, as long as it benefits the students, that's really all that matters.
It is. Yeah. That's the most important thing. And, you know, I always worry that kids make these irrational, quick decisions. And I have to tell them the story, and I tell it all the time. It's like, you know, all the adults I meet are really envious that I can play an instrument, I can read music. And they said, well, I used to do this. And they immediately follow the I used to with, I wish I would never have stopped playing.
And I'm sure you hear this all the time as music teachers, when you talk to students' parents, they say, oh, I played this instrument and I wish I kept playing it. There's never a parent that says, oh, I'm really glad I stopped playing it. If you hear that, I don't like that.
There's got to be some bigger problem in
there. There's a bigger issue going on there because nobody, you know.
It's just one of those things. So that's what we're fighting. We are fighting with that right now. And I, you know, my high school is the same way. And it's so competitive, and kids have this mindset of, you know, I have to do this, this, and this. And I have freshmen coming in that are so academically focused that they are going to start as freshmen not having a lunch period and taking orchestra during their lunch. So, So I have the policy where I let my students eat in my class, which is, you know, it's not the best, and I'm not teaching band, so it's a little bit better.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
But I'd rather have them snacking in my class and, you know, a little bit off task on that, and then not have them at all.
Yeah, so. You're doing the right thing, and it's, I mean, kudos to those students for, you know.
Right. Yeah, and some of them I have to kind of twist their arms a little bit just to get them to realize that, you know, you will miss this, and if you have a lunch period, I walk through the lunch, you know, the lunchroom sometimes, and I see what happens. It's your head goes down and you're on your phone for the lunch period while you're eating, rather than doing something that's going to benefit you in the long run and
totally,
you know, learn collaboration and all those skills that we teach, you know, that's secondary, kind of a secondary byproduct of what we do.
And that's the other point too. And you just brought up a really good point. You know, the athletic side, if we talk about athletics, all the things that happen in a music ensemble are so, so related and so tangible to what happens in the athletic field. The only difference is that, you know, bodies age. And if you play the violin, you know, versus, you know, football or whatever the sport is that you play, you're only going to be able to do that for so long till your body says, okay, why don't we slow down? But if you play the violin, you can play the violin your whole life. You can sing your whole life. You can play saxophone your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a skill that you take with you and you can cherish and share with the world or not, but it's just gives you pleasure. And
that's right.
There's no time stamp on it, you know?
Yeah. And every time one of my students comes in with an injury from athletics, I say, see, if you just would have been playing your violin, this never would have happened. I joke sarcastically with them, and you know, and I'm a big sports person. I coach baseball with my kids, so we're busy into that right now. But it's and I get both sides, you know, and I appreciate both sides.
I do too. You know, both my daughters play sports. They love it. My oldest is doing soccer and lacrosse. My youngest is doing track and soccer. I was a two-sport athlete in high school.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic, but I also don't want to, I want people to know that, you know, the things that happen in a music classroom or in an ensemble setting are really similar to the skills that you're going to get on the field, you know?
Yep.
Absolutely.
A lot of passion. Mm-hmm. Well, Ron, this has been fantastic. I appreciate it. And I'm going to go ahead and I'll also share your video. You have a little 6-minute intro video about the book and about the method. I think it'd be great for our listeners and our audience to be able to see that and learn from it and maybe get excited about maybe trying something new. Because, you know, for me, it's been 28 years teaching, but I'm always looking for the next best thing, you know.
Yeah.
Because maybe something works a lot better than what I've been doing. And
that's why I shared it. That's why I shared it. I'm not trying to, you know, say that this is better than any other system, but if what you're doing may not be working across the board and across all, you know, like if you're teaching band and the chorus teacher is doing a different way of doing it and the string teacher is doing a different way, maybe there's a way to combine them. And it's just food for thought.
Yeah.
It's a method that worked well for me and I just want to share it with the world. So yeah, thank you for sharing that video. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ron Castingway, and I am the author of the newly released book, Rhythmic Sight Reading, The Tikka T Method. After multiple decades of teaching music, including every type of music ensemble, as well as high-level music theory courses and more, it has been my observation that over 90% of the mistakes students make in sight reading is in the rhythm. I began writing this book 4 years ago, and it has been a very meticulous and intentional process. My hope is that this method book will streamline the process for you and your students to take some of the stress out of sight reading. How well do your students read rhythms? How well do your students understand how time signatures work? What method do you use to vocalize rhythms with your students? Is the system you use being utilized across all of the music ensembles and theory classes at your school by your fellow music teachers? If not, why? If your students cannot read rhythms nor inherently understand time signatures, they will continue to struggle in melodic sight reading. Reading music notation is among the top reasons students quit music in school. Let's improve students' abilities to sight read and keep them excited to be in your music program. Invest in your students. Invest in your program. Give my method a shot. It is research-based and has proven to be successful at all levels and in all ensembles. So, how is my book any different from other sight reading books out there? Well, my book is dedicated only to rhythm. The 172-page book is formatted as a cumulative, scaffolded, and flexible 36-week curriculum from beginning to advanced rhythms, and uses a language-based learning system utilizing the vocalization of rhythms. There are only 4 simple words that cover the majority of rhythms students will come across in simple, compound, complex, and even composite time signatures. The words are easy to say at both slow and fast tempos and transfer to all time signatures. This method also helps to isolate and compartmentalize rhythms appropriately, similar to the way we learn a new language. There are over 346 practice exercises, all of which are accompanied by over 363 supplemental MP3 quote-unquote answers, so students know if they are doing it correctly. Oftentimes, one of the biggest problems with practicing sight reading is that students don't really know if they are sight reading correctly. These recorded exercises will help solve that problem. My book is intentionally written to work for every type of ensemble, as well as private instruction and music theory classroom settings. After all, rhythm is rhythm, no matter what genre of music you are performing. The table of contents in my book is pictorial, meaning teachers and students can easily access specific rhythms and/or time signatures by simply looking for the picture of the rhythm or the time signature they want to work on. And there is no teacher's manual to my book, so everyone in the room is on the same page, literally and metaphorically. Practically speaking, my book is thoughtfully spiral-bound, so it stays open on the music stand. And the practice exercises themselves are slightly enlarged to help students see the music more clearly. No more squinting to see the music from your chair to the music stand. And I'll leave you with this recap. Remember, rhythm applies to all ensembles. My Rhythmic Sight Reading Method book is intentionally designed to be used for every type of music ensemble, as well as private instruction, music theory classes, and more. With clear and concise explanations, visuals, and summaries, constructed in an easy-to-use, easy-to-understand format. With over 346 practice exercises and over 363 MP3s, this book could change how you and your students think about sight reading. Improve rhythmic sight reading and witness how dramatically it will boost confidence and accuracy in melodic sight reading. Better sight reading equals more music, equals less stress, equals more fun for both the student and the teacher. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. And be sure to subscribe to my website and to my YouTube channel for more information, updates, and soon-to-be-released tutorials derived directly from my book. Thank you so much for making it all the way to the end of this video, and thank you for all that you do for your students. I hope that you will find my method book both helpful and productive for you and your students. Happy practicing.
So, well, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. I know you have some engagements coming up, some conducting things and some presenting. And everybody, I'll also share his website again. You can learn more about Ron and all that he does by visiting his website. It's roncastingway.com. And you can contact him through that as well. So, wonderful.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Charles. This was really fun. It was great chatting.
Was fun. And I hope you have a great rest of your school year, and everybody else out there too, the same. We're going to go ahead and start signing off here, but thank you again, Ron, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information about the Orchestra Teacher website, podcast, and YouTube channel, visit www.orchestrateacher.net.